Hello and welcome everyone to another great, great episode of the Conscious Junkie podcast show. I have to be open with you guys because that's what this podcast is about really. It's about being open and honest and true to yourself. But I am genuinely nervous, and that is because I've got the writer of my favorite book waiting on the other side of the phone. This particular book is called Help Me, and it was just what I needed earlier this year when I felt out of my flow, of my vibe. While living abroad, I was trying to figure out my life, and the book made me realize that I was trying too hard to be a good conscious yoga girl. It really helped me to place things into perspective and to relax more and to dare to go with the flow again. I would highly recommend this book to anyone out there who is into spirituality, self-discovery, or looking for purpose in life. I'm not going to wait any longer because her English is much prettier and her time is precious. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Marianne Power.
Thank you. I loved that introduction. Thank you.
Comes right from the heart. It's really just how I feel it.
Well, I'm sitting in London now, really smiling. So thank you.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And I'm so lucky to have you in the show and to be able to throw some questions at you because this book just really opened my eyes for some things. And I hope for other people that they can experience the same benefits for it. So if you would now tell the backside of the book to someone, what would you say about it?
So the book is basically about me spending a year of my life trying to fix myself. So it starts when I'm 36 and living in a basement apartment in London, and just I was very hungover when it begins, actually. But it was on paper, everything in my life was fine. I had a really good job as a freelance journalist, and I had friends, and you know, I bought designer jeans. But inside, I was really, really quite unhappy and lost. And when I feel like that, which was kind of growing over a few years, I would do three things. I would drink wine and I would watch the Kardashians. And then I would read self-help. That would be like the kind of way it went. And then I just had this idea while rereading a self-help book at sort of 3 a.m, unable to sleep. That the reason that self-help books never changed my life was because I never actually did what they told me to do. You know, I just would read them and fantasize about how great things would be if I stopped worrying and if I repeated positive affirmations. And so then I had this idea that I would spend a year not just reading self-help, but actually doing it. And I would take a different book each month and do everything it told me to do. And the plan was that by the end of the year, I would be this kind of shiny, happy, perfect, rich, skinny, popular, madly in love person. And I honestly thought that would happen. I really thought that if I could just try hard enough, I could fix everything that I thought was wrong with me, which isn't how the book goes at all. Yes, probably the same as you with trying to be the perfect, you know, yoga girl. And whenever we try, and there's no such thing as perfect, and when we get really stressed and disappointed. Yes. So the book is about my year of putting myself through a lot of crazy situations and then being really hard on myself because I wasn't yet like a cross between Buddha and Beyonce, you know. I was still just me.
Yes, honestly, what I love so much is that you are so brave. I mean, you said that you would do all these things, but you actually did those things. So
I did, yes. And part of what helped me with that was that I wrote a blog about it. So I was blogging. I announced to the world at the start of the year what I was going to do. I mean, when I say world, I mean my friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
And then it grew. And, you know, I didn't take out, you know, an advert in the New York Times. But I told friends, and then people started to follow, and friends of friends started to follow. So then it became very hard to not do the things that I said I was going to do because there was an audience watching. Because I think if it was just me on my own, I would never have followed through and done some of the things I did. But when I knew, you know, if I put up on Facebook, say for my first book was a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Yes.
And it says you have to do something scary every day. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a list of the most scary things I could think of and published that on my blog and on Facebook. And one of the things that I could think of that was the worst I could think of was to do stand-up comedy. So to go to an open mic night in a pub and perform comedy.
Because
I said that in public, I then had to do it. Or at least that's how I felt, because, you know, people were like, oh my God. And so then I had to do it. But of my own, if it was just me on my own, I would never, ever have done that. I would have found any reason to not do it.
Yeah. So sort of your Facebook friends were your accountability partner.
Exactly. Exactly. It really does. It does. For me anyway, I think maybe we're wired. Some people are wired a bit differently, and some people, if they make a decision themselves, they don't want to let themselves down. But for me, I need the public shame. I need people watching. And
You need this external motivation to sort of really make you do those. Well, they were pretty crazy things, right? You jumped out of a plane.
Yeah.
You didn't.
I hated that. And I got my clothes off and modeled for an art class. And then I did a naked yoga class.
Yes.
And I chatted up men on the London Underground, which anyone who's ever been to London will know that you're not even meant to look at people on our metro system, let alone talk to them.
I know, right? So what was the absolute scariest or silliest or weirdest thing you've done?
The stand-up comedy was petrifying. It was really, it was so, so scary. But the good thing about it being so, so scary, the way I did that, I did a kind of a 2-day course where amateurs, normal people learn with a professional comedian for 2 days, and then you go to an open mic night in a pub that was in Paddington in the centre of London. And the good thing is, over the 2 days, I just became so terrified that by the time we actually performed on the Sunday night, I think I had run out of all nervous energy. I was exhausted, and actually in a weird way that made me quite relaxed.
So it exhausted.
It went very well, but I think that, you know, I was so, so scared that at certain points it was just like, oh, just let's get this done and move on. So that was a very scary. And then anything to do with male rejection. So going up and chatting up men on the underground, and also in a cafe I did.
Yeah.
That was really, really uncomfortable for me and very scary, and didn't always go well. I told my local barman that I had a crush on him.
Yes.
And he just went, oh, that will be £25 for the wine, please. Yeah. And that was it. And it was so embarrassing. But then the funny thing is that when you do these things that are so scary, even when they go badly, there's this rush of like satisfaction that comes from just doing something.
You're so right.
Really quickly after, like walking back to my friends after the barman had just sort of, you know, just ignored this declaration. But I walked back, and for a minute I was really embarrassed and really angry and really rejected. But then so quickly, it flipped into a feeling of like, so what? I don't know him.
Anyway.
And I felt like such a hero for just having done it. You know, so often we just don't do things, and we sit in our head and all our stories about things. And to just go out and ask for what you want and to do something you would never normally do, even when it goes badly, it was a thrill. It made me kind of just, we really hold ourselves back an awful lot, I think.
Yeah, we really do. And, you know, I like the saying, I'm not sure who I have to credit for this one, but it's about brave people, and that it's not that brave people that they don't have fear, but they feel the fear, but do it anyway.
Exactly. So that's
true.
What the message of that book is, that when we see people who are out in the world doing, you know, great things, whether that's going off and traveling on their own or starting their own business or, going on loads of dates and going after the people they like, we think that they're different to us and they're just more confident. And the author of Feel the Fear says that's not true at all. to some people, accept that fear is always going to be part of your life, especially always. When you're doing new things.
Yeah.
And if you wait for the day that you feel like you're strong enough to do scary things, that day never happens.
No.
She says you only feel strong after mm-hmm. doing the scary thing.
Yeah.
And that's really true, because I think, again, that's another thing I had always done, you know, I'll ask for a promotion when I'm feeling like I've done more, or I'll smile at that guy when I've lost some weight and yeah. feel prettier. Or it's always, as she calls it, the when-then game. So we'll do things when-then. But that day never, ever comes, because, you know, I never felt pretty enough. I never felt good enough at my job. So those days don't come. You just have to try it anyway.
Yeah. And would you say that after this experiment, you are easier with that now still? Like that you would easier... do something or say something, or
it's in some ways what she says happens, which is totally true, is that your comfort zone gets much bigger. So the more things you do, the more uncomfortable things you do, it's like that becomes a bit more normal to you, those things. So say one of the things I did as well as the comedy was to do public speaking, to stand up on a stage and talk to people. And that I did that first, like in a tiny church hall to probably 25 people. And my knees were shaking so much. It was amazing that I stayed standing. I was so, so scared by it. But now through publicizing the book, I get on stage and talk to hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And I am still really scared, but each time I do it, it just becomes a bit more normal to me. So it's still scary. And I still, when I agree to do these things for the weeks beforehand, I'm like, why did I say I'd do this?
Yes, yes.
But then I do it and I actually love it. So yes, in some ways I am much more comfortable doing things that before I would never have done. But then there's still lots of things I'm still very nervous. I mean, life, that's life. There will always be areas that keep, I'm still not good at conflict or speaking honestly if I'm, you know, find if I have a problem with someone or, you know, I really bottle things up. So that's something I'm still really scared of, just kind of communicating what I'm feeling about something.
Mm-hmm.
So a mixture. In some ways, I think I do things now that I would never have done before. But then there's always lots of areas that still needs to be worked on. And that's just part of being human. And so that's the other message in the book by the end, is just, I don't think any human in the whole world is, maybe there's a few enlightened ones, but for most of us, every day is going to be just to get a case of getting up and trying your best. And some days go better than other days. I don't think that we ever get to the stage where you just feel like you've nailed everything and nothing touches you anymore. Maybe Eckhart Tolle or a few sort of very Zen masters are at that stage. But for most of us, life is never going to be like that. And I always thought, I would look at people, like the, you know, the Zen yoga people who looked hot in their leggings or like successful business women. You know, I would be someone who would read those profiles in magazines of, you know, and I don't know how much if you have these in Holland as much, but the day in the life, and you'll read these profiles. If I get up at 5 a.m. and I meditate, and then I have my green juice, and then I kiss my handsome husband, and then I go and run my $5 million business. And I would read these profiles and just think, oh my God, they're sorted.
Yeah.
But the reality, I'm sure, for those people is that they're getting up every day with their own set of problems and pressures, and they probably feel like they're not doing enough.
No, for sure. We all have those feelings that we all, that's a crazy thing, because you might look at someone else and that life is picture perfect and you're like, that's wonderful. But those people have the same, struggles, but the same feelings, really.
Absolutely. Nothing is how it looks on Instagram.
No, it's not.
Even now with me, and this book is, you know, gone around the world and it's doing really well. And it is literally everything I dreamt of.
Yeah.
But I'm still me. I still wake up and worry about, you know, different things that might go wrong with it. Or, you know, I still pick my spots in the morning. Life is life.
Yeah.
But
there are these moments, and I think last week you were at Happiness Festival, right?
Yes, it was brilliant. You were in Holland. It was so nice.
So
cool. It was really good.
Yeah, but I think there's these moments that in the moment, as what also Eckhart so beautifully explains in The Power of Now, is that we should remember when you want it is what you currently have.
Yes.
Because we tend to forget about it, and we tend to chase our dreams and goals, and we are never really present with what is now. And when was
exactly
what is happening now? Like for me, this moment, you having you on the phone.
Yay!
I was not even sure if you would answer because you don't like to call. So I was like, oh, this is exciting, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And to just allow ourselves to really experience every moment, especially the good ones, because really often we don't, do we? So, you know, just we can always just get rushed on to the next thing. And so with this book, this year has actually been quite overwhelming in ways, because I am doing all these things, you know, television and radio and big speaking, and it's all new to me, all of this. And you know, part of it has been quite stressful, but then there has just been these amazing moments, and especially at the moment now, it's slowing down a little bit, where I can just kind of go, look what you're doing, look at this. And I guess that's, I think part of human nature and why we've achieved so much is that we do go on to the next thing, you know. I think humans, we seem to be, have an inbuilt disposition to be a bit unsatisfied, and that's probably what, you know, what keeps humans evolving and what's invented the internet and made us discover new lands. But for our own peace of mind, this is like, I'm trying to do it a lot at the moment. It's just kind of go, no, just enjoy this day. You don't need to be doing the next thing yet. Just really, like, you know, right now the sun is shining in London, and I'm looking down at the coffee shop across the road, and there's a little kid playing, and I'm chatting to you, and you know, it's a really lovely moment. And we can miss all these moments, can't we, really easily, by thinking of what you haven't done, or what you should be doing, or what might happen,
or what is next. Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
Hey, would you say that that is the biggest piece of advice that you got from this journey, like that thing that has everything to do with being present?
Yeah, and I'm really annoyed in a way that that is my message, because when people used to talk about mindfulness before and being in the moment, I would just roll my eyes and just go, oh, it's so
one
kind
of
obvious
those,
and boring. And, but then sometimes when you feel it, you just feel it, and it's like, oh, wow, okay. And The Power of Now is definitely my most important book, and it's the one that I go back to all the time. Because he does describe, you know, the human brain so well, this brain that just won't stop telling us stories about everything and worrying about the future or living in the past, and how this really, really stops us from feeling peace and joy.
All these voices in the head.
Yeah. He described like records, that it's like we have these records that we put on every day. So in my case, you know, I'm fat, I'm lazy, people think you're boring, you're never going to succeed, all these records that just go on. It's craziness, because they're not true. And that's like taking up 90% of my headspace. And when you're busy playing those records, you could be in a heaven, you know, you could be literally on some sort of desert island beach in heaven, and still you've kind of created your own personal hell. And then likewise, you can be in not very glamorous or nice spots, but if you can somehow have the peace of mind to just breathe and be in the moment, then actually lots of things are really quite fine, even difficult things, it's fine. Yeah, very not easy to actually do in reality, but that is certainly what's in my mind every day, to just try and be here now, be here now.
But that's something I really liked about the book, because some of the books that were in your top 10 list, can you call just some of the titles for people who are into it? Yeah.
Yes. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway was my first book. And I really loved that. It's a fantastic, practical book to just kind of, it gives you like a kick to just get out there and do something. Mm-hmm. So I love that. And I absolutely recommend it to people. And I loved a book called Fuck It.
Yeah.
So I think Fuck It's quite popular in Holland. If I remember, I went on a Fuck It retreat in Italy, and there were a couple of Dutch people.
Yeah,
but Fuck
true.
It is it's all about just relaxing and letting go our kind of need to control everything.
And this
so
is
it's
a
almost
British
like
author, right? If I'm not wrong,
it's a British author. Yeah. And he was working in London as an advertising executive and sick all the time, quite depressed, I think, you know, just really burnt out. And he goes on this journey of trying lots of different, you know, yoga and shamanism and all different kinds of alternative routes.
Yeah.
And then even at that, even I think after doing loads of that, you know, he still hadn't got to be happy, or, and then he just kind of had this realization of just fuck it.
Yeah.
And he says that fuck it is the Western expression of the Eastern philosophies of accepting and letting go. So as soon as we just say fuck it to worrying about our weight, worrying about our future, and actually when we relax, stuff tends to go better. You know, I think we just give off different vibes, and when we're relaxed, people want to talk to us, and quite often you'll find solutions to problems. And anyway, so I loved fuck it. Mm-hmm. And I loved Brené Brown as well, Daring Greatly. Brené Brown has a TED talk that many people know, and that's about vulnerability and about connection. Yeah. And how important it is that we are honest with each other and don't keep up this pretense that, you know, I'm fine, thanks, how are you? Yeah, everything's great. It's about daring to be honest with the people that are in your life. And she says that without that, we will always be unhappy. You know, if she says connection is why we're here as humans. And she says that she doesn't like the term self-help because she doesn't think we're meant to do it on our own. We're meant to help each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true too. And in our
Let me stop you for a moment,
day and age. Pardon?
Let me stop you because, like, exactly this is what your book brought to the world, is that open about everything, and even I had to the things that you struggled with, but you still put it there in the open, and you put it yourself in a vulnerable place. But that was what made me, like, resonate with pretty much everything. I was like, damn, she dares to speak this out, like this struggle, this contradiction, but she's speaking them out. And that makes us connect like humans. It's not just the blah, blah, and, you know, provoking all these things. But you were sharing so much.
But then the thing, I think also what helped with that was doing the blog along the way.
Mm.
And when I started to kind of share a bit more and more on the blog, nobody at any point said, you know, you're weird. I don't understand what you're saying.
No.
All I got all the time was messages of me too, me too, me too. I struggle with this too. I feel like that too.
Yeah.
All these things that I was really ashamed of, and that I thought
This is too much.
Only me. And it's not. So that, and the same with the book, since the book has come out, that is kind of the biggest message I get from countries all around the world, in Taiwan and Korea and Australia and Argentina. Everyone says it's like you're writing about me.
Yeah.
So it shows that we're all, like, way more similar, aren't we? Than
we are.
And yet you could go into a room and a party and come away thinking that everyone is absolutely fine. But in our heads, we're all having really similar doubts, and not that we should necessarily be talking about our problems all the time to everybody, but it is lovely if we can just be a bit more honest and real with each other sometimes. And that's what the book has done for me now in social situations, because, you know, lots of my friends and friends of friends and family have read the book.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that kind of people's guard goes down.
Yeah.
Because they already know all my insecurities, and so they just kind of all start talking about what's really happening in their life, not the we're going on holiday story, like the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so nice. It's nice. It makes life much better when we're real with each other. But it's hard too. It's hard.
But people start to open up, and that must be incredible to witness from your place. Like,
I love it. Yeah. It's kind of the best thing that's come. I mean, there's lots of good things that have come from the book, but for me, that's one of the best things.
Really?
It's just, it's important. Well, not like, it's just, if we could all help each other with that,
to be the one.
And that was for me also why group therapy situations. So the fuck it retreat. And also I did something called the Hoffman process, which is a very intense therapy week. But that's why they were such important experiences for me, because they were the first time that I was in a room with strangers, and these strangers would talk about, you know, really the real stuff that was happening in their lives, their relationships, or the, you know, ending of relationships, or their depression, and the reality of people's lives was never what I would have imagined when I looked at these people. And it was such a relief. So that's why I also think with self-help and self-improvement, if you can find people to do it with, where you can be honest, sometimes that's just the biggest relief, to just realize, oh, it's not just me. who's like that.
Hey, and if 10 books, that's a lot. So which book did resonate the least with you? Which one didn't you feel?
I couldn't get on. There was a book about how to talk to your guardian angels. Mm-hmm. The author is a woman called Doreen Virtue, and she's written more than 40 books on how to talk to your angels, and she has a massive following. But for me, I just couldn't. She thinks that we each have two guardian angels who talk to us and will give us messages, and there's various kind of meditation exercises to try and contact your angels, and just for me it just didn't work. And so I stopped that, I think, after about 9 days.
You tried, but you didn't feel it.
No, I didn't feel it. I really didn't. And I think just that's also different things work for different people, because, you know, in lots of these books, the messages there are some common messages, and they're just delivered in a different way. And so for some people, angels really make sense and that works for them. For me, it didn't. But yeah.
Hey, and I'm curious, did some of the authors of these books reach out to you to say anything?
No, they haven't. I saw that Eckhart Tolle's got a publishing house that I think that he now publishes his own books. And I saw that their Twitter had retweeted an article that I wrote, where I mentioned The Power of Now being one of my favorites. So I think they must be aware of it. And it's funny, my publishers in different countries, the running joke is that after I do interviews, people's main instinct is to go and buy The Power of Now rather than my book, because I love The Power of Now so much. I'm telling everyone to buy it. And they're like, watch it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Oh, okay. I'm surprised. I was just curious. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's—I guess it's quite early days. I don't know how many of them would necessarily be aware of it.
No, because your book is only out like a year. No,
less than. It's still. I mean, it just came out in Italy a couple of weeks ago. It came out. Holland was the first country it came out in, actually, and that was August.
I found your book in maybe November time.
Yeah, wow. So August 2018 in Holland, and then in UK and Ireland in September, and then France in October.
And now 20 languages, or what is it, 20 or more?
29 different, they call it territories, have bought it. So territories, to say the Spanish book deal also includes all of Spanish-speaking South America. The English book deal it's also published in English language in India. And so there's lots of countries, but I think 27 languages it's coming out in at
it's
the moment.
Insane. Hey, and how funny that Holland was the second one. Why is that? Is there a reason? Because we are
say
so
that
open-minded
again?
That then in Holland, that was the second language that the book came out in Dutch.
It was the first language. It came out in Dutch first.
No.
The Dutch publishers, I don't know why, they just got in just before everyone. So that wasn't the book, the English book deal happened first, and then lots of other countries wanted to buy it afterwards. And Holland, it came out 2 weeks before it came out in England. And I love my Dutch publishers. I love them, my editor, and they're just gorgeous. So I have been to Holland, I think, 3 times doing events and interviews, and I have such a nice time there, and people are also just really upfront and honest. I love it. I really love it. I do. Like, you guys, I think, are just really quite straight and real. Maybe because I think in England we're much more polite, and
so
I think
true.
In England sometimes people get a little bit embarrassed or uncomfortable by my like exposing myself the way I do.
Yeah.
Whereas in Holland it seems to be just like I love it.
Maybe your next book that you read should be about a hand reader. Might be that you're Dutch, like in your blood somewhere. Some ancestors who were Dutch.
True. It is interesting, but I also love America for that reason too. So it's the American. It's interesting. All the different countries you do. I do press interviews with them, and Holland, the press is just like, great. Mm-hmm. And in England, they were a bit embarrassed. And it's like, you know, how did you do these things? How did you get naked? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
In Ireland, they just basically wanted to know, could I not just have listened to my mother and saved myself all this bother? You know, my Irish mother is a strong character in it and has, you know, very down-to-earth wisdom. And in America, they I think because self-help is such a huge part of their culture. There was no, they didn't really think it was a strange concept. They were just like, yeah, and have you read this book and have you read that book? And also asking me why I didn't do therapy, because I think in America, it's really standard to go to a therapist. You know, if you can afford it, if you're in a job, you know, and you're earning decent money and have insurance and everything,
that's
it's really normal.
Do.
Yeah, to go to a therapist, just the way you go to a gym or a yoga class. So it's interesting, the different countries have a slightly different reaction.
Yeah. That must be funny, because I think each interview you give, they might ask like just different questions, and it also keeps you like evolving in this whole
journey. I love it. It's fascinating. And then in Spain, I got asked really good questions about religion and Catholicism, because Spain is a Catholic country, and I went to convent school. I grew up with Irish parents and a kind of quite a religious education, and we were talking about Catholicism and the feelings of shame and guilt that seem to be to come with that religion. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it must be. And after this whole self-help adventure, did you ever touch a self-help book again, like a new one?
Yeah. So immediately after I finished, I thought I would never read another self-help book.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, from now on, I just want to be normal and I just want to be in the pub talking rubbish with my friends and just laughing. But now I'm reading them again. Or actually, what I'm doing more than reading is listening to a lot of podcasts now, and I don't know how many of these you'll know, but Tara Brach is a really beautiful meditation teacher. She's based in America, and she has a podcast that's just her lectures recorded, and mm-hmm. she's just a very lovely human person talking about life from a kind of a Buddhist perspective, but very much about to try and be present and how we make life much harder for ourselves than we need to. I listened to Eckhart Tolle has done a great series with Oprah.
Wonderful. I'm
which,
now. That's
yeah,
brilliant.
It's fantastic. I love it. So no, I'm listening to a lot of, and it's probably more on the spiritual end.
Yeah.
I'm not that interested anymore in the books that tell me the 10 things I should be doing before breakfast to be a successful person.
Mm.
That's not how I feel anymore. But I do like the more spiritual, just conversations, I suppose, about what's life and
not telling you what to do, but just really talking about life.
Yeah, helping me understand it a bit more. And
are there still actual practices that you still do every day, or is there a morning routine, or not at all?
Oh, I wish there was, but there isn't. I meditate sporadically, and this year I haven't done it half as much as I think I should have done, because it was this year has ended up being kind of quite an adrenaline, nervous energy mm-hmm. year of a lot of travel and a lot of interviews, and but now it's quietening down again. I'm back to meditating in the mornings and the evenings, but actually I should have been doing that all along.
Just
makes everything feel a bit more manageable, not kind
totally.
Of quite as nervous.
Yeah, and the moments that we're like, we don't have the time for it, it's actually the moments that you need it most.
Exactly.
Yeah,
because there's that quote, isn't there, from somebody that I meditate for an hour every day. Unless I'm busy, then I do two.
Exactly.
Two hours. So, yeah, and I didn't do that this year. But that's fine. But
that's
so I'm
fine.
Back to that now.
Again, that's what makes us human.
Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I don't know how long this will last, but I don't seem to be beating myself up about stuff quite as much as I used to. It's a waste, isn't it? And then I walk a lot. That's my main. When I'm being stressy, I walk and walk and walk and walk and,
that's nice.
You know,
that's
look
meditation.
At trees.
Mm. Marianne, I've got the final part of the podcast, and that is called, it's my favorite part, it's called the Human as Fuck Quiz.
Okay.
And I'm just going to throw some questions at you.
Sure.
And the thing is that you should answer that, like, the first thing on your mind.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to answer, you just say, fuck it.
Okay. Yeah.
Easy as that. We Dutchies, we love fuck it.
Great.
We say it all the time. So here we go. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Inside or outside?
Both.
Favorite song?
Oh, I love Florence and the Machine. I listen to miserable female voices. So there's I've listened to a lot of Florence and the Machine, and at the moment it's a song called South London Forever, about her being a teenager in South London. And anyway, but yeah, that's my favorite at the moment. It changes every week.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then there is wine or Netflix?
Oh, both.
No, choose but one.
Probably
choose
more
one.
Netflix these days. I'm trying to be less boozy than I have been in my past. So yeah, both, but probably more Netflix.
That was probably the hardest one. Okay, we continue. Pizza or pasta?
Pasta.
Giving or taking?
Giving.
Leading or following?
Oh. That's a really good question. I would have always thought of myself as being more of a follower, but I don't think that's actually true. So at the moment, I would say leading. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. That's nice. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you hate?
I hate rudeness and meanness, even though I'm sure there's many times I've been rude and mean. So yeah, one of my pet hates is that we don't smile at each other more, certainly in London.
Good one.
You know, yeah. So, but I'm also like that, you know, it's a bit too scared to make contact because it's not the done thing. So when I'm having a good day and a brave day, I go out and I just smile at everyone, even if they look at me like I'm strange.
Yeah,
so,
or they look behind them like, who is she smiling to?
Yeah, but then somebody told me once that that even if sometimes people are a bit shocked if you give them a big smile and they don't know you, but so they might not react quickly enough to smile back at you, but they might then smile at the next person that passes them by. You know, so it's almost like a delayed reaction, because it can be a bit surprising sometimes if you're lost in your thoughts and someone you don't know just gives you a big smile. It's a bit confusing.
Yeah.
So smiling, people who don't smile, I want to shake them, but I bet I'm that person as well sometimes.
All right. Nice one. And, is there a word that you are allergic to? That you stopped using at all?
A word?
Yes. Yeah.
I hate the word journey. So the beginning of the book is my mum begging me not to use the word journey in my book. And then I joke and I tell her I use the term spiritual path instead. So this the word journey kind of, it's a funny word. And like even in our reality talent contests and things on TV in this country, everything is a journey now. So that's the word that I do quite often say it, but when I do, I kind of laugh at myself for saying it.
Okay, a little bit of allergy going there.
And I
thought this was a beautiful one. How would you rate your happiness on a scale from 0 to 10? What is your average?
I don't know. I think that's, I want to say 7, but I don't even know if that's true. Because, you know, right now I'm in a really peaceful bit where work is slowing down, the sun is shining, and I feel really happy and proud of myself and quite relaxed. So right now, sitting here, I'm a 10. But then there are other days when I wake up and I'm totally anxious about everything and really down for no reason. So it really does, I do seem to go quite up and down.
That's fair enough.
A 7 though. Like I have a good life. I have really nothing to complain about. And some days I have the good sense to see that and other days I don't.
Well, that's fair enough. And then the last question, what does the world need more of?
Oh, kindness. Kindness.
Yeah, it sort of gets back to the smile which you just mentioned, like a smile, a hand on your shoulder, just knowing that we are not alone, I think.
Exactly that. Exactly. We're not alone. And loads of us feel like we are. And it seems to be that modern life makes it harder and harder to have just moments of basic human connection. You know, we're living in laptops, we're often living on our own. I think this is something that we really need to try and spend. I'm talking for myself, but just to really spend quality time with people. Because, you know, even sometimes when we are with friends and family, we're looking at Instagram at the same time.
We should really be more present, be more kind.
Yeah, to ourselves as well. But so kindness and connection. We're all doing our best and we're all the same, really.
So, Marianne, that brings us to the end of the podcast, and I want to thank you so, so much. And let's both smile at whoever wants to.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, exactly. But you've made me smile today, so thank you very much.
Thank you so much.